This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington, sitting in for Neal Conan. War is brutal, bloody, violent, and dehumanizing. It is also a source of artistic inspiration. From Homer to Tolstoy to Hemingway, writers through the centuries have found war a fertile ground for creating fiction. And the visions of war that have resulted touch on all aspects of human experience: heroism, bravery, cowardice, tragedy, pain, and loss, romance, love, even humor. Some books read as passionate arguments against war. Others glorify it. Today, as part of our Writer's View series, we look at war through the prism of literature. What is your favorite war novel? Did any book ever influence or change the way you think about war? And if you've been to war, has literature ever helped you make sense of your experience? We want to hear your war stories. Join the conversation. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. Hillel Itali is the books and publishing writer for the Associated Press. He's written about literature as an eloquent witness to war, and he joins us now from our New York bureau. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Why would you say war has been such an enduring subject for writers through the ages?
Because war itself is enduring. Literature, as you said, is an eloquent witness to war. It's an eloquent witness to everything. And war, of course, is ongoing. And as long as there is war and there are people of creative minds, you're going to get some kind of a literary response to it.
What does literature tell us about war that history and journalism can't?
I guess it's what it tells us about everything. There's some kind of an imaginative aspect to it, some kind of intangible spiritual aspect to any experience. I mean, even the best history, you're often getting, I guess what you'd say is, you know, a very well put together organization of facts and ideas. And literature just gives you something beyond that. When I mean literature, fictional literature, something intangible and imaginative. It just really how it affects people, and it affects us in a way that I think even the very best history, nonfiction history, has a hard time accomplishing.
To what extent has literature glorified war?
It's interesting because you look at the Iliad, which of course is sort of considered kind of the blueprint of war literature, and you can argue that it glorifies war. You can argue that it makes war horrifying. It does it both at the same time. And one of the things that literature shows us about war and about anything is that you can have a completely different interpretation of it depending who you are. If you're a pacifist and you read the Iliad, you can say this is proof. Look how horrible this is. Look at the cost of it. Look at all the destruction caused by it. Someone else could say, yes, there is, but, you know, wasn't it worth it? You know, isn't there something sort of grand about war, and doesn't it bring out our greatest passions and our greatest heroism? So you very often books do it simultaneously. They glorify it, and they show the consequences as well.
I think of modern literature as being more starkly realistic, perhaps you might even say in many cases anti-war. And I guess for me, perhaps the first book I read like that, and I think it is one of the sort of best known, is All Quiet on the Western Front.
Yeah.
World War One. Is that when writing about war started to change in some way, or?
I guess there are different theories on this. I mean, if you look in the 19th century, you look at The Red Badge of Courage, which ironically written by Stephen Crane, who was not in the Civil War. And it's, first of all, it's an extremely vivid account of just sort of the war as experienced by one person. And it's also quite notable because there's no glory in it. There's no higher cause. It's just sort of reporting it in a very naturalistic, very kind of cold fashion. You know, you're just seeing the bodies and the killing and the fear, and you're not hearing why this is all so worth it. So it even, you know, back then and quite possibly before then, you're getting this other side. Well, quiet on the Western Front, I guess, is sort of, I think of it as a, maybe the best example of, I guess, the kind of literature of disillusion. You know, someone goes into war thinking it's going to be one way and discovers it's something else. And I would get the feeling that's why it became so resonant. World War One was such a disillusioning war. It really sort of seemed to truly destroy the world as many knew it. And this book was one that was saying, you know, this is what happened. Someone came in thinking the war was going to be one way, and it turned out to be something very different.
We're talking about war literature today on our series, The Writer's View. We're going to take a call now from Phil in Phoenix, Arizona. Phil, go ahead.
Hello there.
Hi.
All Quiet on the Western Front. It absolutely blew me away, and I'm not trying to pun on that. I picked it up last year before the war, and what struck me was not just the terrible human cost, but the cost of the environment, the earth, and the animals. And he describes horses that had been hit with artillery fire, literally running down this area with their guts spilling out. And he calls it the cry of martyred creation, the screaming being so severe that the soldiers just couldn't deal with it. And I just wanted to point that out. Of all the topics with warfare, everything gets impacted, including animals and the natural environment.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Phil.
Thank you.
Interesting that we're talking about war all quiet on the Western Front, because for me, I think it was one of the first books I read about war that made a huge impression on me. And there's a terrible irony that occurs at the end of that book, which I won't say since some people may pick it up and read it now. But again, that in that novel, that sense of the terrible consequences of war. At the same time, there are books where war is made humorous. I mean, Catch-22, for example.
The military people read Catch-22, not because necessarily they agree with it, but military people are as curious as anyone to know what's out there. I mean, I was surprised to learn this, that, you know, you would think those would be the kind of books the military people wouldn't want to know about, but they're interested in it. I mean, they want to know what's being said out there, Catch-22, Slaughterhouse-Five. I mean, they will read those kinds of books.
And now you've written that most literature comes after the war has ended, that a period of time passes before the good literature comes after a war has ended. Why is that?
Well, it's, you know, you think about the enormity of the experience, and for most people it's simply beyond what they've ever encountered, and it can take a very long time to process that. I mean, there are exceptions. You know, you look at The Naked and the Dead, Norman Mailer's book. I mean, that came out about 3 years after World War II. But other, you know, it's just the enormousness of the experience. I mean, for instance, if you look at September 11th, I think it may be a long time before you truly get a great imaginative work about it, because it's so altering to your consciousness that it takes a very long time to show how the imagination has been changed by it. You can give a factual account of it quickly, but in terms of showing what it means to the imagination, it could take years and years.
Well, since this is The Writer's View, we have asked a couple of writers to join us today. And our first writer is Robert Morgan, an English professor at Cornell University and the author of Gap Creek. His latest novel is called Brave Enemies, and it's about the Revolutionary War. And he joins us now from Cornell University Media Service in Ithaca, New York. Thanks for being with us today.
Good to be here.
Let me ask you, Professor Morgan, why did you want to write about war? Were you yourself ever in combat, first of all?
I never was, but I've always been fascinated by reading fiction about war and also history, really since reading War and Peace when I was in high school. I just fell in love with Tolstoy's book for many reasons, but that was one of them. Those vivid portraits of the battlefields and the Napoleonic Wars, Pierre lost on the battlefield, Prince André looking up into the blue sky of eternity after he's been wounded. And I grew up among storytellers who talked a lot about the Civil War and the Revolution.
Your novel, Brave Enemies, is based in the Revolutionary War. Why did you choose to write about that war in particular?
Well, several reasons. There's been so much focus on the Civil War. I wanted to go back to the Revolutionary War, which is the threshold of our republic. And I grew up with a dad, who was a wonderful storyteller, and one of his favorite stories was about the great victory of Daniel Morgan over Bloody Tarleton, Bannister Tarleton, at Cowpens in January of 1781. And I have an ancestor who fought in that battle, so I've always been interested in that battle. But I knew I was going to write a novel set in the Revolution and culminating in that battle when I was reading Tarleton's memoirs. Mm. And he described why he fought that battle after marching his men most of the night. He said he wanted to fight it before the Green River Rifles. These are mountain sharpshooters who specialized in picking off officers at a great distance. Mm. He wanted to fight before they got there. Well, he didn't know they were already there in the front line waiting for him. I grew up on Green River in western North Carolina. Mm. So there was another personal connection to that battle.
You had to do a lot of reading of history. Did you do a lot of research, a lot of reading of history before you sat down to write the fictionalized account you had in your head? Or
I did. This was about 12 years ago. I got all the biographies of Daniel Morgan and Tarleton and John Eager Howard of Baltimore and Pickens of the South Carolina Militia. I read all the histories I could find of the Revolution in the South and in the Carolinas. I even wrote the battle scenes. I thought I knew what was going on at every minute in that battle. But I couldn't decide who my main characters were. And I discovered that, of course, novels are about lives. They're about people, not just great historical events. So I had to put that project aside, and I wrote five other novels before I came back to it.
And I think our listeners would be very surprised to learn that this is the story of a woman. And this is the story of a woman who disguises herself as a man.
That's when I was able to write the novel, finally. I decided my main character was a 16-year-old woman dressed up as a man on the front line of that battle with the North Carolina militia early the morning of January 17th, 1781, waiting for Tarleton to appear. And I knew my story was going to be about how she got into that very unlikely role.
Why a woman? Why did you want to take on a woman's voice?
Well, my greatest success as a fiction writer has always been writing about women characters and in the voice of the women characters. And I thought I would try that. But beyond that, I wanted an absolutely innocent view of the action of what's going on. This was an unbelievably brutal time in American history. It really was a civil war. It was neighbor against neighbor, brother against brother. It was hanging, robbing, tarring, and feathering. And I wanted somebody who was not prepared for war to be describing what she sees with an absolutely fresh point of view.
And this is not an uncommon storyline in war stories. I mean, the Chinese classic Chinese poem about Mulan, for instance, is about a woman disguising herself and going to war.
There were lots of women fighting dressed up as men in the Revolution and in the Civil War also. There were three reasons, basically, I think women did that. One was to go with their husband, to pretend to be a man, to go with the husband. Some were going looking for their husband. There were no communications in those days, and you would lose track of a husband. That seemed a good way to find him. And also, some women joined to get revenge on the British, in this case. Their husband had been killed or their brother had been killed.
Robert Morgan, hold that thought. We're going to continue this discussion when we return from a short break. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Mm-hmm. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. We're talking about the writer's view on war. Our guests today are Hillel Itali. He's the books and publishing writer for the Associated Press, and Robert Morgan, author of Gap Creek. His latest novel called Brave Enemies takes place during the Revolutionary War. What novel or work of literature impressed you in its eloquence on the experience of war? You're invited to join the discussion. Give us a call at 800-989-TALK, and our email address is totn@npr.org. And Hillel Itali, we were talking with Robert Morgan just before the break about the fact that he has used a woman as one of the main characters in his new book. How common is the story of war told? How often is the story of war told through women? Is that a common theme?
I would imagine it maybe more now, but I mean, certainly in classical times, up until recently, you know, women, the books were written by men. The wars were primarily experienced by men, although not exclusively. So it's a relatively recent, you're getting stories like that where it's really opening up more, that you're seeing it experienced, you know, from not just from men, but from women too.
All right, let's take a call now from Philip in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi, Philip.
Hi, St. Augustine, Florida.
St. Augustine. You know what? I wasn't sure I was pronouncing that right. Thanks for letting me know.
Well, it is named after the saint, but of course we Southerners have our own pronunciation. Well, I heard y'all talking about Kurt Vonnegut's Slaughterhouse-Five, and I have to say that's probably what prompted me to call, was that when I read that. And then, of course, I read Catch-22, and all during this time I was in the National Guard. And from 1966 till about 1970, and then I went active duty in Germany, nowhere near Dresden, which was the bombing described in Vonnegut's book. But
what was it about those books in particular that really impressed you in the way they?
I have to say, I was raised kind of a redneck Catholic Southerner, which is a bit of an oxymoron, but at the time. We were still very Southern in Jacksonville, where I was reared. I went to a Catholic high school in Jacksonville, and we had no black students. I had no idea there was even a black high school until after I graduated. I found out there was a black high school in town that was a Catholic high school for black kids. And when I went to college, I went to a Jesuit college. We only had one black student there. And then when I ended up going to active duty in Germany, in the 70s, in 1969, actually, in 1970, it was the first time I was really living with people other than my own race. And, of course, there was the civil rights movement going on. There was the anti-war movement going on. And there was just an amazing amount of change going on in the country. And my whole worldview had been changing. And by that time, when I got to Germany, we all took the war in Nam as a joke, and we would see people come back from Vietnam who were really basket cases. Unfortunately, it was sad. And there were fraggings where people were rolling grenades into the officers' mess tent up in Frankfurt, which is a little bit north of where I was stationed. It was a turbulent time, and so when I got out, I went back to college and became the editor of the school newspaper. I ended up in Oregon, of all places, and ended up writing an anti-war issue with a rip-off of the cover art from Hunter Thompson's book, Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. On the cover, it was a picture of a skull with a helmet that had the United States flag on it. It was so radical. But
so those books, Slaughterhouse-Five and Catch-22, appealed to that sort of jaded side of you, I guess you're saying.
Right. Well, Slaughterhouse-Five was very descriptive, and I haven't read it in years, and frankly, I don't remember a whole lot about it except about the horror. And then Catch-22, of course, was what I eventually came to, I guess, emulate in my actions, which was more of a cynical and sarcastic view of the world. And when I became the editor of that school newspaper out in Oregon, we did an anti-war issue on the to coincide with the parade that they held in Albany, Oregon every year, where Jimmy Doolittle came in and led the parade through town. And,
right. Well, Philip, I'm going to bring in, I want to thank you for your call, and I'm going to move on now because we're going to bring another writer in who actually has written about the Vietnam War. So thanks so much for calling us.
Thank you.
And that writer is Tobias Wolff. He is the author of This Boy's Life, a memoir, and In Pharaoh's Army, Memories of the Lost War. He also won a Penn Faulkner Award for his novella, The Barracks Thief. He's not only written about the Vietnam War, but he did experience it personally, and he joins us now from Stanford University Studio in Palo Alto, California. Thanks for being with us.
Hi.
First of all, as a writer, did you view experiencing war as something of a rite of passage for a writer? Did you feel like it was something you needed to do? Because I know you volunteered to go to Vietnam. Did that have something to do with your ambition to be a writer?
Let's back up a minute. I didn't actually volunteer to go to Vietnam. I volunteered for the Army. I joined the Army as a 18-year-old, and we weren't really in much of a war at that point. That happened soon after I joined, and then I did indeed keep volunteering for things that would no doubt get me sent over, but I did so also with the hope that by the time I finished my training, it would be over, because once it got hot over there and I started seeing guys coming back, any kind of allure that the idea of war had ever had for me quickly vanished. And so my best friend in the Army was killed over there before I went over. Whatever attraction that notion had ever had for me had vanished before I ever got there. You asked a question a moment ago that I think is really an interesting one, and that has to do with when you write about war, do you, whether you mean to or not, do you glorify it? And you know, that is the eternal problem of the writer, I think. Hmm. I, out of curiosity, went to see the movie Troy, which of course does glorify it, even though there is a kind of nod in the direction of anti-war sentiment. It really is a warrior's movie. But you know, there are scenes in the Iliad. There's one I was recalling when a young man who has been captured by Achilles and sent away, sold away, he's one of the princes of Troy, somehow makes his way back to Troy, and Achilles catches him again, cutting figs in an orchard. It's just this ordinary thing that someone would do. And the man begs for his life. He holds Achilles' knees and begs for his life, and Achilles will not give it to him and kills him. There are moments in the Iliad that if you ever really understood them, you would never, ever want to do this thing yourself. And so many of the writers, I think, who in a sense have created a sense of glamour quite involuntarily about war, it requires an adult eye to go back and understand exactly how forbidding this experience is from their point of view. But the problem is when you read it when you're young, when you're most vulnerable, you catch the excitement, you catch the distinction of the event, and you know that in order to have written this wonderful thing, the person actually lived through it. Well, and that's what draws you.
What do you think literature can reveal about war that you can't, that history or journalism can't?
Oh, the inner life of the person who undergoes it, and not only the person who undergoes it, but those who are touched in this infinite ripple effect outwards. I have just been reading Testament of Youth, Vera Brittain's memoir of her days as a nurse during World War I. And her fiancé Roland was killed in the war. Her brother Edward was killed in the war. All the friends that her brother had at school, Jeffrey, Victor, were all killed in the war. There was nothing left but devastation around her. And you have only literature, I think, can make you feel the ongoing effect of this in the soul and the spirit of individual people. It actually we enter other people imaginatively when we read. It's in a way that I think is very hard to do over time in images, in headlines. We just can't do it. They're here and gone. Even a movie is over in 2 hours. But you live with a book. You live with those people. And you feel that loss in yourself. It becomes part of your own memory.
Your book is a memoir. It's not a fictionalized account. Why did you choose memoir rather than fiction?
Well, I had written some fiction about Vietnam, and I always had this dissatisfied feeling at the end of it that there was more that I wasn't telling. And finally, I was forced to confront the fact that the more that I wasn't telling was my own experience, which was unique, as everyone's experience over there was unique. There's a tendency to talk about the Vietnam vet as if we all had the same experience, and to lump us together. And the great power of literature, I think, is to break down the tendency we have to generalize, and to force us to see that every life is distinctive, is unique, and that makes it, of course, harder to do the things we do to each other once you recognize that. It is the power of kind of official rhetoric to make a they out of everybody else that we can easily assign negative qualities to and make them worthy of non-existence. And literature runs up against that again and again. It breaks that tendency to generalize down. And so I wanted to create a singular record of how a rather ordinary person gets swept up, gets carried through on a kind of current of history, and the things that happen to you when this is the event you get carried into.
We are talking about the writer's view of war. If you'd like to join our discussion, the number is 1-800-989-8255. And we're going to take a call from Martin in Cleveland, Ohio. Hi, Martin.
Hi. This is Martin. The book I read, which tells me a lot about the war, was actually a comedy. Most anti-war books are. But it's called The Monstrous Regiment. It's about women going to war disguised as men. And it was there's a lot of breaking down of the glory of war in that one.
And that's what appealed to you about it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Terry Pratchett does a lot of comedy, and most of his stuff will take apart what's happening right now by comedy from the past.
All right. Thanks so much for your call, Martin.
Sure.
Hillel Itali, let me just ask you one question about that, and that is humor and war literature through the ages.
Humor is in everything, whether we want it to be or not. I don't think there's probably yet been a human event that was beyond humor. Whether we is even the most horrifying, you'll see dark comedies about September 11th. It's just part of who we are. So war, inevitably, although more so it seems, I guess it's more so now, maybe the really dark humor that you get in, again, like Catch-22 and Slaughterhouse-5. It certainly seems as we're much more irreverent about war now than people were centuries ago. That would seem to open up the possibilities more of humor in it. But there really, there is yet to be a human experience that somehow was beyond humor. It gets in there somehow.
Hillel Itali, thanks so much for being with us. Hillel Itali is the books and publishing writer for the Associated Press. We're going to continue taking calls with our writers Robert Morgan and Tobias Wolff. And you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Robert Morgan and Tobias Wolff, I have an email here from Sue, and she says, "What about Lysistrata? The ancient Greeks had a devastating sense of humor to relieve the horror of war in this ancient classic. The women in this piece decided there will be no gratification for their men till they stop the fighting. It's quite bawdy, but also makes you think about the horrific nature of this man-made convention we still perpetrate today, war." Robert Morgan, Did you go back to the classics at all as you were contemplating your own writing about war? What do we learn from what the classics, with the ancient Greeks and Romans wrote about war?
Well, the great thing about literature in general is it connects us to people across time and distance, across cultures and ethnicities, race, and that sort of thing. And one of the great things about reading in general, and certainly reading about warfare, is we recognize ourselves in people often very different from us. And it's exciting to read about people very different and then to discover, in fact, we have an enormous amount in common with them. It's one reason we read and one reason we write. And it's amazing reading the classics of Greece or other cultures to realize just how much we share with those people. Reading both Homer or Thucydides, shall we say. But I believe that literature is very important because it does give us that sense of connection and community with people. We feel better to realize that we are connected with people even that far away in time.
And Tobias Wolff, your book is called In Pharaoh's Army, making a reference back to another ancient culture. Talk to me about what that is about, that title is about, what it meant, where it came from in your experience.
Yes. When I was growing up, we had a Bible in our house that had an illustration of Pharaoh's army pursuing the Israelites across the path that had been created in the Red Sea. Unfortunately for them, at that particular moment, the Israelites had already gotten across. And so here you had this powerful host stuck in the middle of the Red Sea with these towering walls of water curling above them and kind of starfish and lobsters at their feet. And the horses are rearing up in terror because it's clearly all about to close over them. They've been sent on a fool's errand. They didn't know what it was that they were, what might happen to them. They were up against forces that they did not begin to comprehend. And this, I'm afraid for me, was an image of our own selves in Vietnam. This immensely sophisticated, powerful host we didn't know the shot when we went there. And it seems to be a script we still haven't learned to follow, not to follow. And so for me, it was this image of power defeated by forces that it hadn't bothered to try to comprehend before opposing. And that, I think, is something isn't unique to our experience in Vietnam.
Tobias Wolff is the author of In Pharaoh's Army, Memories of the Lost War. We're also talking with Robert Morgan. He is the author of Brave Enemies. We're going to continue this discussion about a writer's view of war when we come back from a short break. I'm Lynn Neary. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Lynn Neary in Washington. Tomorrow, join guest host Joe Palca on the next Science Friday for a trio of fish stories. Is that really red snapper on your dinner plate? And coming up shortly, we're going to be talking about intelligence failures in history. If you have any questions about famous intelligence failures that you have read about, you're welcome to give us a call at 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. Right now, we're talking about the writer's view of war. Our guests are Robert Morgan, author of Gap Creek and Brave Enemies, and Tobias Wolff, author of This Boy's Life, a Memoir, and In Pharaoh's Army, Memories of the Lost War. What's your favorite literary take on war? Give us a call, 800-989-TALK. We're going to go to Andrew in Buffalo, New York right now. Hi, Andrew.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to say that it's a great show, as always, but my favorite literary take on war, I discovered while prepping a musical work about a year ago, and that's The Good Soldier Schweig of Hašek. It was written as a great satire of World War One and sort of this idiot everyman soldier in the First World War and how he interferes with the daily goings on. But it's a wonderful portrait of the savagery of war and the day-to-day life of a soldier at the same time.
Thanks so much for your call, Andrew.
My pleasure.
It's interesting to me, Robert Morgan and Tobias Wolff, how often people are mentioning war novels that are funny, humorous war novels. Tobias Wolff?
As Hillel Vitali said, there's something about the most horrible experience that almost forces us to respond with a kind of humor, not a farcical humor, obviously, but to find some way of wrestling our way out of the complete grip of the thing, and we do that by finding things to laugh about, and there are comical things in any experience. At the same time, I would hate I would hate that kind of view of war would become dominant, because really, you know, there's nothing funny about it. And in the end, there's when I think of you know, the great hole that has been left in the lives of the mothers and fathers of people who've died, their sisters, the people who love them, and how that just goes on and on. The children that they didn't have, who would have given something to the world, people who've lost their legs, people who've lost their sight. And, you know, war isn't about soldiers anymore. It's about civilians. Only a fraction of those killed in wars now are soldiers. It's war against the innocent. And I'm hard pressed to love the humor in it anymore, I have to admit.
What is your favorite war novel, or one that really had a big effect on you?
Well, it's hard to single any one out, of course, but every 2 years or so, I make a kind of pilgrimage back to War and Peace. Hmm. It just seems to have everything in it.
Both of you have mentioned that now. Robert Morgan, you mentioned War and Peace as well.
Oh, yeah. Reading War and Peace when I was about 15 changed my life. It gave me so many new ideas about the world, about history, about the possibilities of writing and literature, and about romance, about,
you know,
language.
What, and, you know, let's not forget the peace part of War and Peace, because I always like the peace.
Right.
I always like the
Absolutely.
Peace part of War and Peace myself.
Absolutely. Oh, absolutely. Bob, go ahead.
I'll never forget reading that passage early on where Pierre looks out in the moonlight and Natasha is there speaking at the window. That seemed like the most romantic scene I had ever read.
Yeah, and that's something interesting about war novels. Some war novels really are also about coming home, about the people who are left behind, not just the battle scenes necessarily.
Exactly. Some of my favorite writing about wars actually has to do with its aftermath, and I think Hemingway's short stories are particularly wonderful about this. His story "Soldier's Home," for example, about a young man named Krebs who's returned from World War I, and his attempt to figure out how to behave. If he pretends he was scared all the time, he knows that was a lie. If he doesn't want to brag, but he's completely displaced and he's lost his connection with his family. He can't pray with his mother anymore. He's lost in that way that we recognize now as characteristic of that generation, and adrift. And, you know, again, it's a question of aftermath. What actually happened there, as in, say, Big Two-Hearted River, is never described, but you feel the effect on that person.
Right. Let's see if we can get one more call in on this subject. Mark in Cleveland, Ohio.
Hi.
Hi. Go ahead, Mark.
I'm an English teacher in Cleveland City Schools, and I teach the Red Badge of Courage as part of a unit on peace studies. And this novel is often considered the 19th century American war novel, if not the American novel. And this book was originally published in series in newspapers, and it was heavily edited in the 1890s, because the country was still under this patriotic oppression. You know, you were either part of the Union or you were a traitor, you were a Confederate. And there has been an edition of the novel that's put back together from the original manuscripts that Crane wrote, and it's an anti-war novel. in that form, as opposed to it's usually presented as a boy goes to war and he becomes a man.
Interesting point, Mark, and I'm going to ask both of our writers to just respond to that, because so many of these novels about war, at least certainly modern novels about war, writings about war, ultimately are really often really passionate tracts against war. Let me just ask both of you to make a final statement on that before we go. First, Robert Morgan.
Well, I'm not sure there is such a thing as a pro-war novel. It's not in the nature of the novel. Somebody said that the plots of all novels are the same, which is that nothing is what it seems. And to some extent, the novel, from its very beginning, the modern novel, has been an anti-heroic medium. The novel, as we know it, was invented pretty much when a lot of women learned to read. And the novel is about what women want to read, and they're very rarely heroic in the sense that classical literature is. So the novel, I think almost by definition, surprises and deconstructs the heroic and punches through, and the person who seems least heroic comes through in some way as being more heroic.
Tobias Wolff?
Yes, I mean... you can certainly make a case that now and then, as say with World War II, a war needs to be fought. I mean, World War II is a pacifist nightmare. What really would have happened had we not fought it? It's unthinkable. And at the same time, the novelist who actually confronts the experience of fighting it cannot depict it otherwise than as dehumanizing, as destructive to their person and to you know, those around them. It's a paradox, and one that the novel is continually wrestling with, as it wrestles with the problem of even as it means to tell the truth about war, and it is not a very pretty truth. Nevertheless, to the young, seems somehow inevitably to glamorize it again.
All right. Well, thanks to both of you for being with us today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Robert Morgan is the author of Gap Creek. His latest novel is called Brave Enemies. And Tobias Wolff is the author of This Boy's Life, a memoir, and In Pharaoh's Army, Memories of the Lost War.